Newcastle University in England. And that's it for the show. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time, have a great week.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune into KBOO on Saturday, May 20th from 5 to 7 p.m. for a special broadcast of Apano's Voices of Change, Deepening Ties, Growing Power. It's an annual gathering of AAPI community to celebrate the past year, talk about future hopes, and be together. That's Apano's Voices of Change, Deepening Ties, Growing Power, starting at 5 p.m. on Saturday, May 20th, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
So, how much is that golden doodle or adorable Frenchie in the window? Probably a lot, especially in terms of suffering for its parents, who in many cases are living lives of misery in a puppy mill. On the next episode of Voices for the Animals, we'll be talking with Robert Hensley, senior counsel for the ASPCA, about their push to pass Goldie's Act, a bill now in Congress that would ensure better conditions and oversight for the hundreds of thousands of dogs now suffering at the hands of large-scale dog breeders.
The dog that Goldie's Act is named for was one of the dogs that lived in squalor and tragically was allowed to starved to death over several months while USDA inspectors observed her deteriorating condition, but did nothing to help her.
That's on the next Voices for the Animals, Friday, May 26th at 10 a.m. here on 90.7 KBOO FM. If you love animals, and especially dogs, don't miss it.
Our goal is to create an atmosphere devoid of genre, a place where quality is key. It's important for the world and future generations to understand the power of art and music. Ultimately, we are doing our part to carry on tradition. Tune into Passing Sound, the first Saturday of each month at 10 p.m. on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM, or KBOO.fm, where we make musical structures for the listener.
Welcome
to
another episode of Civic Cypher as we broadcast from the Hip Hop Weekly Studios. I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. That's important because people be reading my Instagram like I'm awkward. I'm quirk. I am Q Ward.
Write it down.
That's who I am.
People need to know. People need to know.
And you're tuned in to Civic Cypher.
Indeed you are. A lot to stick around for today because there's a lot going on in the world. I'm going to tell a story about something that happened to me recently. You know, a lot of times folks think on this show that we kind of ride above the sort of racism and the prejudice that we report on because of our platform.
Why on earth?
Because
would anyone assume that part?
We're going to let them know that it happens to us. I had an incident happen with me just the other day, so I'll tell you all about it. Also, we're going to talk about this strange thing that's happening in the country where people are getting to decide who gets to live and who gets to die based on what they're afraid of in that moment.
Or what they hate in that moment.
Yeah, that's,
you know, I don't that's, like to give fear as a,
yep, that's,
as a scapegoat.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong, Q. But of course, people often hide behind fear. So we're going to talk about, indeed, the many high profile incidents of people who have lost their lives because somebody thought it was their right to take a life. Oftentimes, the victims end up being Black and the perpetrators are not Black. And then we're going to discuss the racist origins of the no trespassing sign, among other things. So, first and foremost, like we always do at this time, we're going to start with some ebony excellence. You want to take this one, Q, or should I?
Nope.
All right, then I'll take this one. Today's Ebony Excellence is sponsored by Major Threads, and we're going to shout out Zayla Avant-Garde. She was born in 2007 in Harvey, Louisiana. By age 13, Avant-Garde got her first world record for the most bounces in 1 minute with three basketballs. I've seen the video. She's bouncing three basketballs. And it's kind of like a juggling pattern. It's really dope. So she's got the Guinness World Record for that. Her second world record is for the most bounce juggles in 1 minute with four basketballs. And as if that weren't enough, her third world record was for the most basketball dribbled by one person simultaneously. And she also is a talented unicycle rider. And in 2018, she was featured in an Under Armour commercial with NBA star Steph Curry and has performed with basketball legends, the Harlem Globetrotters. Now, that would be enough for any measure of Ebony excellence, but we're going to take it a step further. This is somebody we didn't get to talk about on the show, and so we're happy that we get to do it today. I'll tell the story. On July 8th, 2021, she became the first African-American to win the Scripps National Spelling Bee in the 96-year history of the event. The win came with a trophy and over $50,000 in cash and prizes. Avant-Garde won the championship with the word Mariah. Never heard this word before, but it was defined as a type of tropical plant. And the only previous Black person to win the spelling bee was a 12-year-old Jody Ann Maxwell of Jamaica in 98. So she was a Jamaican, not an African-American. But back to Avant-Garde, when she grows up, she wants to be an archaeologist, a WNBA player, and to work with NASA. So shout out to you.
Sounds like she's on her way to doing all three.
All of it. All right, moving on. So as I mentioned, I had a run-in with the fuzz the other day. And for folks that don't have, for folks that don't walk the path of a Black person or a brown person or a marginalized person, you might not be able to really understand what discrimination looks like and how insulting and how dehumanizing it can be. You might not walk around with a certain fear might be too strong a word, but a constant companion we'll call concern for yourself relative to your surroundings. You might not carry that with you the way that someone like me, someone like Q would carry it with us. So I will give you some insight into something that happened. This was probably 6 days ago as of this episode. Now, let me back up a bit. A few weeks ago, I went and bought some little BMX bikes. Right? My little boy is big enough to ride a bike now. And so we've been enjoying our neighborhood, riding bikes around. And I bought two of them. So I have a BMX bike too. Now, I'm an adult man. My son is 8 years old. But I used to ride BMX bikes when I was younger. That's the bike I'm comfortable riding. And that's the one I got. We got some GTs for those of you familiar with those old school bikes, and we got the good ones because we're doing a little bit better these days than we were back in the 90s when we had to ride them Huffies. So really exciting time. riding around the neighborhood with my son, just kind of enjoying this time together. He asks us questions, we ride around, listen to music, and just enjoy the weather and enjoy each other's company. And we share. We have more than just the two bikes, so we'll share. We have other people come over and ride bikes with us from time to time as well. Well, there is a neighborhood near my house where I'm looking to make a purchase. I've been on tours in a couple of the homes, and I have relationships with the people in the community, of course, but also with the realtors, so forth and so on. And this neighborhood is quite affluent. It needs to be stated because I don't want to misrepresent what happened here. So the night of this incident, I was hanging out with a friend of mine, and she and I decided that we would go for a bike ride. This is my new thing. I invite everybody to ride bikes. Q is probably the only person who hasn't jumped on a bike with me, but everybody else has got to get on these bikes and ride around this neighborhood, man. Now I want to be clear. My neighborhood is different from this neighborhood we rode the bikes to, but it's close enough for a bike ride. So very close neighborhoods. But I would say a definitive step up in terms of how affluent the neighborhood is, right? I don't live in a bad neighborhood at all, but this neighborhood is just different, okay? This neighborhood is called the Biltmore. Those who are familiar with the lay of the land here in Phoenix, but the Biltmore is kind of this affluent neighborhood that I was talking about. I don't live very far from there, just down the street. So this night, my friend comes over, and we're hanging out, we're talking, and we decide to go for a bike ride. And it's night, you know, in Arizona, it's very hot in the daytime. So you want to wait until the sun goes down just because it's cooler. I'm not getting dressed up to ride this bike. No one would, because we're not going to see anyone. We're not going to do anything, nothing like that. We're just going to get on comfortable clothes and ride the bikes. And while riding, I suggested to my friend, hey, do you want to check out this house that I'm thinking of purchasing? Just did a tour there the other day, and I'm thinking that this might come together. Just waiting on, you know, a couple of things to pan out and see what, you know, the sellers are trying to do. But you know, I'm absolutely in talks for making this purchase. So she says, "Yeah, let's go check it out." So I want to paint a picture for an outsider looking in, after I paint this picture of me. Okay, me, Ramses, on a bike in a t-shirt and some shorts at night, a BMX bike, mind you, riding around the neighborhood in Arizona. So harmless, nothing to see here, just a man enjoying a bike with a friend or by myself, but this evening I was with a friend. And this friend was not black. Now, to an outsider looking in, I know this. This is a part of that constant companion. I know that I probably look like a drug person, or I'm on drugs or selling drugs, or, you know what I mean? It just doesn't look, this isn't the sort of thing that people see and are entirely comfortable with, right? So I'm mindful of this. It's that constant companion. I'm aware of that. Now, it hasn't affected me, but I'm aware it's impossible to be black and not be extremely self-aware. And this is my estimation, because I've lived this life for 40 years. I know what it means to be black in this country. And something as simple as riding a bike, something as simple as existing in the wrong place at the wrong time, would be a death sentence. This is what we cover on this show quite a bit. So I recognize that a bike looks youthful, and youth and black and male often looks like trouble. And if I'm not dressed a certain way, I'm not wearing my Rolex, I'm not driving my Corvette or Mercedes or any of this sort of stuff, I'm just riding a bike, it looks very different to people who have been taught to fear that combination of features manifest in one person. Okay? But I have something else on my side. And that is, I know the people in the neighborhood. A couple of them I'm business partners with, right? I'm in this neighborhood 4 or 5 times a week, have been for some time, and feel very comfortable having established myself over time in this neighborhood. People come up to me and say, hey, nice car. I love your hair. You know, whatever. And, you know, I, for those that know me, I'm like, I have a bunch of tattoos and all this sort of stuff. So these people, I've managed to ingratiate myself, if you will, to these folks that live here. So I know who I am, but I also know that these folks, if they see me, there's nothing to fear. Right? They know who I am too. So there's nothing wrong with riding the bikes over there, checking out the house, just as a destination to enjoy the bike ride. And that's exactly what we do. The thing is, turning into the Biltmore, there is a police car there. Right? And I clocked that police car immediately because that's what you do. But I also, in the amount of time that I've ingratiated myself with the folks that live there, I also know the police officers that are there during the daytime. Funny, I know, because this is Rams, this was always very critical of the police, but I've actually talked about both officers before, Suzanne and Daniel. Kind people. And I use them and another person, I don't want to say his name, but his last name, but Kevin, who is a, he's a, now a Queen Creek police officer. I use them to ensure that I'm being fair when describing how policing should be done and referencing the system of policing, not the individuals. Okay. So the two police that are there during the daytime, I know them very well. In addition to the mailman and, you know, the people that, do the caddies, so it's a golf course as well.
For our non-black listeners, that mental inventory that Ramses is giving you right now, the names of the police officers, the mailman, the relationships with the neighbors and the people that live in this neighborhood, in this community, that is normal for us. The noticing of a police officer that's here that, I don't know that one.
Yep.
That is normal for us. Not just when you go to a neighborhood where you might buy a house, but if you're going to the gas station or to your kid's school or to the store or anywhere that's not home, every time you see a police car, there is a mental inventory, a snapshot, and kind of a checklist in your head. Is my seatbelt fast? Mm. Was I driving too fast? Mm. Did I signal when I got over? Did I come to a complete stop at that stop sign? Did I drive through that intersection while getting over? Like anything, because there's all these stuff that you don't know that you can be cited and pulled over for. Sure. That all of us do every day.
So it's
just to the discretion of said officer if they feel like making your day hard that
Thank
day.
You.
Every day.
Thank you.
And for us,
as normal, it's
more times than not, they got time today.
So watch this. I'm glad you said that. So we ride into the neighborhood on these BMX bikes. It's nighttime. It's not super late, but it's nighttime. Let's call it 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. On the way in, flip this. So a friend of mine that lives in the Biltmore, name is Cheryl. Her husband's name is Ira. Ira, they're very wealthy people. They both have Rolls Royces. And Ira's Rolls Royce is very interesting color combination. It's metallic blue and gold. So I saw Ira's car as I'm riding bikes into the Biltmore, and I waved to him and just kept riding. Got inside, and police officer sitting there. Just rode right past him because I'm assuming I'm not doing anything wrong, not harming anybody. And we didn't stop. We just rode. So it's like a circle. So you just ride around. Rode around. It's about a two mile lap. Pointed out the house that I was looking at, and we're just talking and riding, and then rode back out. Now we're about 3/4 of the way through, and then I see that same police officer ride. Now he's driving. He drives the opposite direction of where I'm coming. So I came in an entrance, and it takes you into a circle, and it lets you back out at the same entrance, right? So I'm about 3/4 of the way through the circle going around, and he's driving the opposite direction. So we kind of crisscrossed, right? And he said, you guys need to make your way to the front. And I thought to myself, that's not right. And I thought to myself, who would I be if I did not step up in this moment?
Expound.
Would I be a coward? Would I be a person who has allowed my fear of this officer to cause me to tuck my tail and run? Or can I stand on the accomplishments of my life? Can I stand and say to this man, I belong here. I'm actively working with business partners in this neighborhood. I'm welcome at any number of these homes after so long. And in fact, I'm engaged in the process of purchasing one of these homes myself.
The sad truth is, if your name was Grayson and not Ramses, no, you probably don't need to stand up in this moment for what? Just ride the bike back out and come home. And what are we talking about? This is not the take a stance moment.
So
the ride the bike night.
Yeah, you're not.
No.
So this is what,
absolutely
this
not.
This is what my friend who was riding with me was trying to say. But here's the thing. It's incredibly embarrassing and incredibly dehumanizing when you've talked and you've painted this picture and you have this exciting thing on the frontier of your life and you're trying to share it with somebody, show, you know, whatever. And then someone who doesn't know anything about you other than you're riding a bike at night and you have an afro. I have an afro for folks that can't see me. Is using their modicum of authority in that moment to expel you from this neighborhood, this affluent neighborhood. So I took it upon myself to introduce myself to this officer. So I went back to the front where I saw the officer initially, and I sat there and I waited. And eventually the officer rode back around and I waved to the officer. This is my way of saying, hey, come talk to me. We should probably know each other. I know. And I said this when the officer pulled back around, because I know the other officers here. I'm bringing my children here and I don't want any sort of prejudices to work their way into your decisions as you patrol this neighborhood. This is what I was thinking in that moment. I know this is dangerous. I do not recommend this to anyone else, but
listen to me. Pointing out you don't want these prejudices to make their way into the decision-making processes of said officers not only increases the chances that they will, but even causes some of them, in order to prove to you that they don't have such prejudices, to become more confrontational with you.
Mm. So?
So if his name was Grayson and not Ramses, now you can go see their house tomorrow in the daytime when the cops that you know will be patrolling the neighborhood.
For those that don't know,
it'll be a way safer time for you.
For those that don't know, Grayson is the name of Q's son. So we tell our children, do as I say, not as I do.
Listen, man, come home to your dad, son.
Well, to continue, I stayed still, waited for the officer to loop back around because I knew he would. And then my friend, she was on her bike and she just kind of parked off to the side. And I had a little rubber band thing around my phone that was playing music. So I tried to turn the music off as the officer was pulling up. And then I realized that probably looks suspicious. These are things that may not go through other people's head, but I was like, that probably looks suspicious. Let me just turn the volume down and keep both hands on the handlebars so he doesn't think I'm, you know, even though he got all them bright lights on me. So he hops out of his car and the first thing he says is, hey, this is a private property. So you guys can't be here. And so I said, "Well, sir, I want you to know that I know a couple of your colleagues that work at your same precinct. I mentioned Suzanne, I mentioned David. I mentioned my business partners. I mentioned that I'm here all the time. And in fact, I'm putting an offer on one of the houses here." And he says, "Well, that doesn't matter. This is private property." So he tried to double down on that. And so I says, "Well, if this is private property and you're a public servant, then are you being paid to be here and indeed off duty? Or is this indeed public property?" And he says, "Well, that's not the reason that I pulled you over. I waited for you." But he says this. He says, "The reason I pulled you over is because your bike doesn't have a headlight."
So if his name was Grayson and not Ramses, he's not sitting there being told why he was pulled over when indeed he wasn't, because he just went home and came back tomorrow in the daytime when the officers that he know would be present, and it would be way less dangerous and way less likely that something stupid would happen. But his name is not Grayson. His name is Ramses. And the story continues.
So the officer, I took the same rubber band that was holding my phone, listening to music, and I turned the light on my phone. I was like, "Okay, there you go." And he's like, "Huh? Give me your ID." I was like, "Okay." Took my ID out. I gave it to him. And while he's looking at my ID is a little beat up. So he had to discern, like figure out what it said.
If his name was Grayson and not Ramses, this thing that he calls an ID, because it's not that anymore. It's just whatever material that it's made out of. It's just that
plastic. Yeah, my ID is a little beat up.
And paper or whatever. It's just that. It is no longer a suitable form of identification.
So
it's terrible.
So watch this. So my question is, okay, so if this is indeed private property, do you need a light to ride on private property, or do you need a light to ride on public property? And he started to get frustrated because I'm catching him up in these stories, and he kept trying to pivot and switch. This is private property. Oh, it's your light. Oh, well, if it's private property, you don't need a light, you know, these sorts of things. And the fact is that I wanted to introduce myself, and I did. I said, "I want you to know who I am, because there's a very good chance I'm going to end up living in this house right here next to the person who's just running for attorney general, Rodney Glassman, who's also a friend of mine, you know, and he's Republican, but he's always been kind to me. And it's important that you know who I am and who my children are, because we are going to be living here soon." And then he took my license and he came back and he said, "All right, well, you're good." I said, "Oh, I know." And then he asked me what I was doing for work. And I said, "I do what I want."
That's an and awesome then, answer.
Yeah. You can Google me, dude. And then as I was riding away, I realized he never carded the lady that I was with at all. And that's what it's like to be Black. So shout out to Officer Am. Said I'd say your name, and I did.
You know who else he didn't card? Grayson. Because Grayson was at home with his dad, not looking for a police officer to have a confrontation with.
And now, proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the border.
For those of you just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You guys are back with us on Civic Cypher.
A lot more to stick around for, so be sure to do just that. We are going to be talking about, funnily enough, the second half of the show. Who gets to decide? Lives or dies? And why? And what?
How are we going to make a whole segment out of that quick question?
Listen, man. Listen. There's so many layers to that.
I just heard and processed and answered that question right now. I have no idea how we're going to do a whole segment on that. But hey,
we're going to try to figure it out. Another thing that we're going to do, and I want you to stick around for, is we're going to check out the origins of the no trespassing sign. There's so much stuff that's racist In fact, there's an account called Everything is Racist. You should follow it because everything is racist, or so it seems. But first and foremost, let's discuss BABA, becoming a better ally, BABA. So today's BABA is sponsored by Unknown Union, the fashion house situated at the intersection of meaning, innovation, and culture. More info, check out unknownunion.com. All right, for today's BABA, we got a line from one of our followers, Miss Romo's Creations, at Miss Romo's Creations, who wanted us to highlight a teacher named Alice Soy. And her account is Music with Miss Alice. She says she's an amazing educator who advocates for our AAPI brothers and sisters, spreads joy to children and adults alike, and has inspired her and many other educators to do better at decolonizing their classrooms. We missed this BABA during the Teacher Appreciation Week, but today we're going to highlight her. So I will read some of what I got from my research of Alice Soy, again, at Music with Miss Alice. All right, and this is what she says. In my own activism, I have shared my voice alongside my students and continue to challenge the notions of what music education is within our field and to onlookers from outside the field. I ask students constantly to reflect on what it means to build community and to create cross-cultural connections between differing communities. In addition, I ask students to question the separate histories they learn that divide communities. As an Asian American music educator of mostly Black and Latinx students, it is important to understand how BBIA, or the term global majority, may unite us. Yet, we still have our own nuanced identities and stories. I have shared stories of racial discrimination and stereotypes I faced as an Asian American woman with my students, and also histories of Black and Asian solidarities that continue to this day that are not always highlighted. So again, I want you to check her out, Alice Soy. She's breaking down barriers and decolonizing classrooms, and we want to make sure that we shout her out at Music with Miss Alice. Keep going. You are becoming a better ally.
Shout out to all of our teachers.
All of y'all. All right. Who gets to decide who lives or dies? Okay, first off, before we get into this, Q, there's been a ton of stories that we haven't been able to talk about in the news, resulting in people, Black people, dying. And you, before we started with the show and turn the mics on and everything, you came up here earlier and you had a lot to say about how these high profile incidents of individuals, sometimes civilians, taking the lives of folks who are unarmed, not really posing a threat, maybe having an episode or just shouting, like what Karens do all the time. How these Black people are losing their lives. And you made a connection to some politicians, mostly right-wing politicians, using that for campaign fodder so as to suggest that this is the type of behavior that we want in America. So paint that picture a little bit before we get into the actual stories.
I don't remember how long ago, Rams, but I told you that a bunch of our people, and not just our people in the broad scope, but like specifically friends of ours, mm-hmm. people that we interact with, mm-hmm. During our last, during our last president's time in office, mm-hmm. say things that I think they thought were woke or hyper enlightened, or like, y'all can't see me on the radio, but yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Fist pump.
I'm glad that they showing their true colors, because, you know, I would rather have somebody be racist out loud and show me how they really feel. And
I remember that time.
And I'm like, no. Because that's wild dangerous.
Yeah.
I like the fake polite, fake decent, performatively nice racist person.
Yeah.
that pretends that they're not racist when me and my children are around. Because yeah. that's way safer.
Yeah.
Like, way safer. And I knew that it was not just a slippery slope.
It's a sheer cliff.
An avalanche. Yeah. Once that type of behavior became something that people's palate was able to taste and not spit it out immediately, we were going to be in trouble. Once people did not have to pretend to be decent anymore, it was not going to be a better life for us. People's private thoughts in their homes cannot kill me. So they could call me the N-word or just be flat, bigoted, racist in their own homes, as long as our society required of them to pretend to be decent people in public. Mm. And we used to. And now we do not anymore.
Yeah, it's real out loud.
And it's become like a badge of honor for them now. Let me show you how racist I am, because what I realized during the last presidency is that y'all really rock with that. Mm. And this is how I've always felt anyway. So let me go and get this off my chest, because it's clear that my people are riding with me.
Yeah.
So now we have, it's not even, it doesn't even make sense to call it the extreme right wing anymore. It's just Republican politics
yeah.
to wear racism on your chest, like the Superman symbol.
Yeah.
As a way to get elected, as a way to raise money, as a way to garner support from the tens of millions of people who have shown, yo, I rock with that. Y'all spitting right now. When is the mixtape coming out? How do I subscribe? Do it again.
What a way.
You know what I mean? So now we're at a place where our country has shown us, once upon a time, I can just grab her by the, would have automatically disqualified you as a candidate. Like, you can't even consider running after that you said out. That out loud, except that person then became the president after everyone knew that that was how he felt. And people wonder why I was frustrated and angry and terrified, as so many people start to buy into the idea that all politicians are the same. All politicians are politicians. So there are some things that by nature of the job that they have in common, just like all cars are cars.
Yeah.
They all got tires and an engine and a gear shift. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, all cars are cars. All politicians are politicians. Sure. But we understand that the Fiesta and the Ferrari aren't the same, yeah, right?
It's different.
So once that nature of politician was acceptable to the palate of the public, we were in trouble, because pretending to be decent means that at one point, because you thought the country would turn their nose down at you if you were a racist bigot, you'd have to pretend not to be, just to stay in the good taste of decent people. We have now retrograded back to a place where, you and I talked about this on the show as well, people posing in front of burnt, hanged Black people as a family, because even those people considered themselves to be decent back good then
people, yeah.
because that was acceptable by society. Society had to determine that those things weren't acceptable for those people to feel bad. If society hadn't out loud thought and felt different, those practices would have continued.
Yeah,
and I'm watching us go backwards to that, and nobody cares. Because, and I'll say this as often as I get in front of this microphone, it has become intellectually beneath a lot of Black people to call overt racism racism. We are hyper woke ourselves now. And to prove how intellectually superior we are, we have to act like the idea of racism and white supremacy holding us back, we have to act like that idea is beneath us. We have to act like we've arrived at a place where that's no longer the case. And we think that you're lazy if you think so, and you're just not working hard enough. Racism doesn't exist. The man isn't holding you back, it's you. No, fam. It absolutely still exists. And as long as we are the ones saying that it doesn't, playing into the idea that it doesn't, turning our noses down at the conversation about reparations, so-called allies, people who we elect, who we get into office, have a conversation with them about reparations and watch how fast their tone changes. Well, you know, we don't want to put a dollar amount on it. Why not? We've crossed the bridge too far now. Now that we're talking about paying us some money, we've gone too far. And as I watch the country like slip away from the ideas of progress, of inclusion, of equity, of unity even, right? I've heard somebody say this before, and it's a really tragic truth. 9/11 at least united us. And we've heard all the conspiracy theories. We've seen the documentaries. Even if they all played out true and that was orchestrated, man, did it give us someone else to point at. Man, did it give us an enemy to be united against. Man, did it put us all on the same page, on the same team, if you will.
Everybody had the flag. Flag wasn't a
and
racist
that flag
symbol.
Did not mean what it means today.
Yeah. I had a flag on my Dodge Neon going to my second year of college.
I got the flag, player. All of us.
So watch this. The people that you're talking about, the politicians that you're talking about, they have now found, and I see this time and again, it started way back with George Zimmerman and just kind of super duper localized politics. But, you know, we saw with Kyle Rittenhouse, you know, the former president hosted him. Remember, Kyle Rittenhouse got out there and shot a protester at a BLM rally.
I think he shot multiple protesters.
We killed one of them. We've seen people get shot for knocking on the wrong door. We've seen Greg Abbott, the governor in Texas, wants to pardon a man convicted of killing another BLM protester. And then there's the ones that have happened this week. Okay.
And that governor wants to pardon that person on the basis that they're white and killed a black person. That's it. Not, he didn't think they were wrongly convicted. He didn't think that it was trumped up charges. He didn't think that, you know, the prosecutor, you know, misplaced some evidence or did something corrupt. Nope.
Yeah, it just became political. It's beyond the scope of the law. And since he's a governor, he has a right to do that. And that, I think, shows you exactly what black life is worth and what we don't want taught to our children. We want our children to know that black life is worth something. If someone harms you, they will be punished.
Is that at all still possible in this country? Ooh. And I mean that as a serious question, not as something for us to think about for a second, pregnant pause out loud and move on from. Is that still possible?
I'm always going to say I think it's possible.
He's always going to say that.
That's just who I am. I think it's otherwise, you know, why we do this show, because we think the world could be a better place. There's got to be some part of us, some corner that still believes that in each other's humanity and in the fact that we're brothers and we're sisters, and some of our brothers and sisters have lost their way. And I believe the basis of their behavior is fear.
How come it seems that those numbers are growing?
Because we got work to do. That's that. I mean, you know, but while we're here, let's make sure that we tell these stories. So for those that don't know, one of the stories that happened since our last episode that we've been able to cover, because we couldn't cover it last episode, was Jordan Neely being killed by Daniel Penny. So I'm going to read this. On May 1st, 2023, around 2:30 p.m., Jordan Neely, a homeless 30-year-old black man, was killed by a white 24-year-old ex-Marine who placed him in a chokehold while they were riding the F train in Manhattan on the New York City subway. At least two others restrained Neely's limbs. Freelance journalist and witness Juan Alberto Vasquez recorded video of the incident. I want to let you know I'm reading this from Wikipedia. All right, according to police, witnesses said Neely was acting in a hostile and erratic manner, telling riders that he would hurt anyone on the train. Vasquez said that Neely was shouting that he was hungry and thirsty, that he did not mind going to jail or getting life in prison, and was ready to die. Vasquez said that Neely did not physically attack anyone, while police sources said that other witnesses reported him throwing trash at passengers. A man approached Neely and put him in a chokehold. The chokehold lasted for several minutes, and at least 3 minutes were recorded on video. According to Vasquez, the chokehold lasted for 15 minutes. An onlooker warned about fatal harm being done to Neely, saying, "You're going to kill him now." After the chokehold, the onlooker said, "He's all right. He ain't going to die." Vasquez said that Neely was moving and defending himself during the chokehold, and Vasquez did not believe that he would die. Neely was taken to Lenox Hill Hospital, where he's pronounced dead. According to some sources, he died on the subway car's floor. Okay, so we have a story here where, again, I know you know this because this has been national news for some time. Forgive it. That's just our news cycle. We're on once a week for an hour. But story where there's a homeless man, black man, very tiny man. Many of you have probably seen the video. If you haven't, there's no need to watch this video. It's exactly how it sounds. There's a human being whose life is snuffed out. So don't go out of your way to watch it. I'm not trying to say that his life is not worth you knowing about, but
there's a lot more videos of his life that you can watch.
Yeah,
we're talking about his life.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
There's a ton of videos
because I don't want to make it seem like I don't want you to know about this, but I do want you to know.
The video he's talking about is the type of thing that could cause you mental and emotional trauma after you've seen it.
Yeah, it's not good.
So there are plenty of videos of this young man. If the idea is to honor his life and know more about him, of him dancing, and even in what may be considered a compromised mental state, bringing light and joy to people. Not harming people, just like he wasn't harming people the day he was murdered.
Thank you.
So the video is just hard to watch. It's not making less of his worth or his life.
We on this show, for those that don't know, we take turns watching videos because we don't want to ourselves become overwhelmed with death and black harm against black bodies, black and brown bodies. We have to do this every week, so we try not to do it. But this week I had to watch two human beings lose their lives on video. And it just stays with you, keeps you up at night. It's not cool. So that's what I mean. All right. So what happens is we have a mentally disturbed man who was having an emotional breakdown. He was hungry. Or let's point to economic reasons for this episode, right? Economic means societal, means it's preventable. We just need to get everybody on the same page in terms of identifying what the problems are. And I know. But that's what we need to do.
Well, you say we need to do it like it hasn't happened. We're not still trying to identify what the problems are. That's we all know.
Indeed.
But this is not a mystery.
The point is, we haven't figured
it out yet.
We need to ensure that our elected representatives know to equate crime rates with poverty rates rather than equate crime rates with race.
That's not in their best interest.
Of course not. But that's what we need to do.
It's not intellectually beyond them.
That's where we need to go. To
draw those conclusions.
That's where we need to go. And what I'm saying is, if a person is walking around on the subway saying that he's hungry, listen, I'll tell you like this. I believe I'm a good man. Too, I believe that you're a good man. I believe you mean no harm to anyone. Okay? I believe that the circumstances in your life ensure that you don't have to harm anyone. No one will be worse off because of your presence in their life. I do believe that if we changed a couple of circumstances, let's say it's the end of the world and water is scarce and food is scarce and you got two babies to feed and I got two babies to feed, that might change. Things might get a little bit more dicey and tougher decisions might have to be made because I need to ensure the continuation of my family and that my children have the resources they need to grow up. And you might end up undertaking some actions that you wouldn't if you had
some economic insulation. Let's say it that way. I believe that everybody listening would agree with that statement. It doesn't matter what color you are, right? So that helps you to point to economic factors over just these people are just bad people. So it's okay to kill them.
Yeah, but even the people that say that know better. It's just not in their best interest for anyone else to know better.
Well, we're going to teach you better. So, again, a mentally disturbed man on a train, hungry, telling everybody he's hungry, yelling, fed up, frustrated, gets put in a chokehold, his life ends. And the person who killed him has a $2 million war chest based on donations.
Legal defense fund.
Right.
Because he was made a hero.
Yeah, and they're saying he's a hero.
Republicans.
So let me read this other story. Michael Anthony shoots Banco Brown for suspected shoplifting. Again, economic conditions.
Another awful video.
He was at a Walgreens.
Fine if you didn't see.
Yeah, you don't have to watch this one. But he was at a Walgreens. You're not shoplifting to come up at Walgreens. You're shoplifting because you need some stuff. Walgreens don't sell nothing that costs more than $20. Okay? Not shoplifting at the jewelry store. You know what I'm saying? All right, so I'm going to read this from TMZ. San Francisco District Attorney Brooke Jenkins, who is also Black. Need to make sure I say that.
I need to point out some things about the killer as well.
Released the footage Monday to show why she declined to bring charges against Michael Earl Wayne Anthony for killing Banco Brown at the store on April 27th. What Anthony says was self-defense. Huh? The video starts off. You know, I'll read. The video starts off with Anthony blocking Brown carrying a bag of alleged stolen items from exiting the store. Anthony then goes after Brown, repeatedly punching him and placing him in a chokehold. At one point, Anthony lifts Brown off his feet and throws him to the floor, getting on top of him as the two thrash around. Finally, Anthony lets him up, prompting Brown to grab the bag of merchandise and start for the exit. At the door, Brown whirls around and appears to make a move at Anthony. It's pointing and talking and yelling and that sort of thing. So you point your finger. And Anthony pulls a gun, opens fire, and kills the alleged thief. So what I want to say while we've got this little bit of time is that, you know, I don't know what was in that bag. I assume it's stuff that's necessary.
It doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter. But, you know, food is something that's commonly stolen. Even economic factors. So we see animals, birds flying and take a piece of bread, cats steal a piece of meat. We think it's cute. Human beings do that. And we're seeing it's a destiny if they're Black. We saw what happened with Hurricane Katrina. These last two people were unarmed, as I mentioned. They ultimately pose no threat. So where's the line of I'm afraid and I get to kill you? Because that could be different for everybody. That needs to be clearly defined.
You're Black, and the chances that I'll be held accountable are far less. So if I don't like you, or if I quote unquote fear you, I can kill you and I'll be fine.
Well, this is what I put. Do you get to kill someone because you're scared? Not if you're Black. Often, yes, if you're white, absolutely, if you're the police. And I want everybody else to know that we've seen the video of Mekhi Franklin in Baltimore as well, and we're following that story too. So as more things come out about that, we will follow up with that where we can. All right, it's time for the Way Black History Fact. Today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by Underground Beach Club. From the streets to the beach, for the finest in beachwear, visit undergroundbeachclub.com. All right, no trespassing. Parts of this reading comes from the Constitutional Rights Foundation and other parts come from the Atlantic. Make sure I shout out both of those publications. All right. The end of the Civil War marked the end of slavery for 4 million Black Southerners, but the war also left them landless and with little money to support themselves. White Southerners, seeking to control the freedom of former slaves, devised special state law codes. Many Northerners saw these codes as blatant attempts to restore slavery. These are called Black Codes for the uninitiated. And Black Codes later gave rise to Jim Crow. Okay. Little thought had been given to the needs of the newly emancipated slaves. Shortly before the end of the war, Congress created the Freedmen's Bureau. It furnished food and medical aid to the former slaves. It also established schools for the freedmen. By 1870, 250,000 Black children and adults attended more than 4,000 of these schools in the South. The Freedmen's Bureau also helped the former slaves in the workplace. It tried to make sure that the former slaves received fair wages and freely chose their employers.
The Bureau created special courts to settle disputes between black workers and their white employers. It could also intervene in other cases that threatened the rights of freedmen. White Southerners resented being ruled by Union military governors and Freedmen's Bureau officials. They sought to restore self-rule. During the summer and fall of 1865, most of the old Confederate states held constitutional conventions. President Johnson's Reconstruction Plan permitted only white persons to vote for convention delegates or to participate in the framing of the new state governments. Not surprisingly, none of the state conventions considered extending the right to vote to freedmen. South Carolina's provisional governor declared at his state's constitutional convention that, quote, "This is a white man's government." Quote. The newly formed slave legislatures quickly authorized many needed public projects and the taxes to pay for them. Among these projects was the creation, for the first time in the South, of free public education, but the public schools excluded black children. The state legislatures also began to pass laws limiting the freedoms of former slaves. These laws mirrored those of colonial times, which placed severe restrictions on both slaves and emancipated blacks. Neither of these groups could vote, serve on juries, travel freely, or work in occupations of their choice. Even their marriages were outside the law. That means you could rape their wives. White Southerners also feared that if freedmen did not work for white landowners, the agricultural economy of the South would collapse. During the last months of 1865, a rumor spread among freedmen. The federal government was going to grant, quote, 40 acres and a mule, unquote, to every ex-slave family on Christmas Day. Although the federal government had confiscated some Confederate lands and given them to freed slaves, it never planned to do this on a massive scale. Nonetheless, expecting their own plots of land, blacks in large numbers refused to sign work contracts with white landowners for the new year. At the same time, Southern whites passed around their own rumor that blacks would rise in rebellion when free land failed to appear on Christmas Day. All these economic worries, prejudices, and fears helped produce the first black codes of 1865. These codes consisted of special laws that applied only to black persons. The first black code, enacted by Mississippi, proved harsh and vindictive. South Carolina followed with a code only slightly less harsh, but more comprehensive in regulating the lives of, quote, persons of color, quote. Before 1865, from the colonial period onward, the only case of pure trespass in the modern sense that was available nationwide came from South Carolina. In 1818 and again in 1820, one South Carolina landowner had sued hunters who were ignoring his demand that they leave his land. The state high court sided with the hunters, holding that the right to enter private lands was, quote, universally exercised, unquote, and noting that merely riding over the soil caused no injury to the landowner. The opinion cited state statutes in support and went on to say that granting landowners the power to exclude hunters would provoke an insurrection. No idle words in South Carolina. Now, let me stop here for a second. Because as I mentioned, the law said that you cannot say that someone was trespassing on your land if they were hunting, right? Now, this is before 1865. We all know what happened in 1865. So I promised the story of the no trespassing sign, where it came from, the origins of no trespassing. So watch this. After black codes were enacted, trespassing laws were enacted to prevent foraging and to force the hand of free black Southerners into working for the white plantation owners they once served. In other words, you're free, but you have no 40 acres, you have no mule. You have to figure out a way to make money to feed yourself. You have no land, you have nowhere to go. So rather than traveling and foraging, for those that don't know, foraging is like picking berries off a tree and that sort of thing.
You also can't work where you want.
Right, right. And on top of that, you had to call your boss, master,
They made sure to write that in the laws too. But instead of living off of the land, like the courts insisted was a human right prior to 1865, they enacted trespassing laws. And what they did was twofold. It ensured that Black folks could not eat fruits that grow off of trees or, you know, berries that grow on bushes. But it also ensured that there was one more law that could be broken. If you just existed in the wrong space, you could be arrested for that and sentenced to prison. And those that know about the 13th Amendment know that when you're in prison, you can perform manual labor, and the state could then lease you to a farm owner or a plantation owner for whatever period of time your infraction got you, which of course was severe. So if you were trespassing, that's a 5-year sentence. So now you're a slave for another 5 years effectively. So not only can you not go and pick berries to eat, but now you can be arrested and returned to slavery. So this gives you just a glimpse into what it was like in those times, but also a glimpse into the history of the no trespassing sign. So when people say everything's racist, I don't think they're too far off base. And that's going to do it for us here on Civic Cypher. So once again, I'm your host, Ramses Jha.
Jha, this is exhausting, man.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
But was it?
Yeah, it wasn't a long time ago, but it was long enough ago. We don't need to have that weigh us down now.
Was it long enough ago that the laws are that much different from that now?
Fair point. Ugh. Yeah, because I mean, I got hemmed up the other day. This is private property.
I'm just saying.
And it wasn't. This is a public road.
I'm just saying.
That's why a public servant is there. At least don't come and protect my house, because it is indeed private property. Anyway, want to thank you all for listening. Do us a favor. Hit the website, civiccypher.com. Donate. For those that listen on the podcast, there's a new way to donate there as well. And again, that is on the website, civiccypher.com. The price of a coffee, you could help support the show. We're trying to do something special here, y'all. Until next week.
Peace.